Blog Talk Radio.
That's the one and only Bob, Mr. Marley, putting it down like he always does. You've reached us. We're adding a couple of extra shows because, you know, we've got to keep an eye on these people. I'm Citizen Payne. This is Kay's son and friends. I'm the son, Eric, with my friends Wayne and Byron. And we're talking our talk. This is Kay's son and friends. So today's Monday, as you know. We just got different episodes coming all out because we like to keep an eye on things, and there's a lot of things to keep an eye on. And I'm going to get – Byron's got to jump off soon because I'm going to get him in the discussion really quickly. And the first thing, Byron – let's bring Brother Byron on real quick. He's doing big things. What's up, Byron? How you doing this evening, brother?
Well, God and grace and peace, my good friend Eric and Wayne. You know, I'm down here in the cesspool and the death clock. The president death clock is counting and kicking into high gear as we see the pandemic, COVID-19 and racism 20, exploding all across this nation. As of today, June 29th, 2020, the United States tolls, unbelievable, 2,593,169 people infected in the United States. How many dead? Over 127,693, and those figures are current, up to the minute, and they're growing even faster because 2 days ago we hit a high of over 45,000 infected people in 1 day. Eric, Wayne, now what's going on in the nation's capital? Well, there are 551 dead people as of today. And how many infected? In Washington, D.C. alone, I'm not counting Maryland and Virginia, which is called the DMV, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. We're just talking about our country's nation capital. There are over 10,292 people infected. And what's going on in your area, in New York City, the nation's financial capital? There are over 211,569 people infected. That's New York City. Eric, that's not New York State. That's New York City. And there are over 22,470 people dead. Now, what are they saying with respect to the projections? They're saying that by the end of this month, or the end of July, we will hit over 200,000 people infected. That's incredible.
That's right. It's
remarkable. 49 million people unemployed. Understand where we're going with this? And we're supposed to trust government who says, because, Eric, you know, one of the things I really want to get into, and I know you want to talk about the tearing down of Confederate symbols. We kind of touched on it last week. But
a little bit, but before we jump into go ahead.
Okay,
I mean, finish make your point, and then we'll talk about we want to dig further into those numbers.
I make the point is this. What people don't realize is why is it important to tear down a symbol like that? I was told and schooled by the best of SCLC. My mentor was Reverend Jose Williams. That was Martin Luther King Jr.'s Castro, as he called him. And he told me, he said, Byron, do you know why the civil rights movement addressed its first place of attention was at a lunch counter and a water fountain and a place to pee? I said, I really don't know. That's why I'm here. I came to Atlanta to really find out. Tell me, school me. He said, it's because it was the easiest place to get people, our people's attention, to engage in what was wrong as a symbol. And if you address the symbol, then you can address the bigger things of unemployment, of job equality. But you've got to start where people are most affected, going to the bathroom, drinking some water, and sitting down at a Kresge or a Woolworths lunch counter to get a 15-cent hamburger. That was critical.
Right.
Voting was not even the most important part at that point.
Okay,
and that's
and,
why the symbol must be torn down. And you got to go back to the founding fathers and acknowledge the sins of the founding fathers. George Washington had over 300 slaves. And I'm going to ask you this, Eric and Wayne, and then I'll stop. Do you know any white people whose last name is Washington? Come on. You know a lot of people, y'all.
Good question.
I'm going to stop right there.
And we're going to bring Wayne in, too. Let's bring Wayne in, then we're going to go back and unpack some of the things you started out. Wayne Gilman, what's up, brother? What's on your mind these last couple of days?
Oh, please. It's like a broken record, man. You know, I every day you wake up, there's just something new, some new facet. Another reason why that it's getting to the point where you can't even, you know, be patient enough to withstand the rage and the anger that boils up within when you want to get somebody to go, and he has got to go. It's it's just unfathomable that we're living through this crisis, and every day, you know, you just don't know. I mean, it's to the point, there was a poll taken, I think, over the weekend. One of the broadcast outlets did it. And they said that most Americans now are at a point where they are not as optimistic and sure of what the future is going to be like if this man remains in office, just predicated on what he's done now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's upsetting. It really is upsetting, but it is what it is. What are you going to do?
Well, along those lines, you know, watching 24-hour news, and they had a particular segment on MSNBC where the young lady went to a section of Pennsylvania that is 86% white. No, it's more than that. It's only 6% black, so it's 94% white. And so she was talking to these people about their vote for Trump and how they were feeling, and these are Republicans who voted for him, now watching how he's reacted and responded to the protests. They're having second thoughts, and one couple said, you know, a couple weeks ago they were sure going to vote for him again. Now they don't know. And the gentleman, the husband in particular, said, you know, that he wished he would be more compassionate in talking to the people and dealing with the people and here addressing their concerns, the protesters. And then they talked to a young woman, a white woman in her 30s, I guess, early 40s. Hers was the same thing. And I suppose what shocked me and what shocks all of us continually, I believe, is that it took that long for these people to realize that this guy was a racist. And so they were, and it also showed me how okay they were with other statements that people make. And I guess it's if you're a part of a society where you are of the reigning ethnic group, reigning over everybody else, when you hear derogatory things made by a member of your group towards the oppressed group, I guess it's not that urgent for some people. I guess some people could live with that. And they actually said, yeah, well, some of the rhetoric, you know, I didn't pay attention to and all that. Why not? That's a luxury. That's a white supremacy luxury, not to pay attention. Or whoever, if you happen to be part of a group that is reigning supreme over others, if you don't happen to be white, maybe you're in another country of other colored people and you're reigning supreme over white people, I wouldn't know where that place is on the face of the earth. But if that happens to be the case, surely you can understand And it took these people all this time, the visualization of seeing George Floyd's life snuffed out from him. And I venture to say that if Chauvin had not had that look on his face, I wonder if all these people would have taken it as serious. I wonder if he had a look of struggle, like he had to hold a brother down or whatever, or made believe. If he didn't have that expression of, like, I'm comfortable here, I'm going to murder this man, and there's nothing you can do about it, and nobody's going to do it. If he didn't have that look on his face, I wonder if there would be the same reaction. I don't know. But I just, when I hear people say, and now I'm beginning to have second thoughts. Really? Now you're beginning to have second thoughts? Because you witnessed, and many white people say, I never realized the brutality of this. They never even thought about it. Never even had discussions of race in their family, in their home life. And that's the issue. And that's white supremacy, isn't it? That you don't even have to consider that. You don't even have to consider other people in the world.
I understand what you're saying, and it is unfathomable to think that people actually think that way. But, you know, unless you are directly affected, and I think what has happened, and we've said this
before. And that's human nature, to a certain degree.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know, I'm white, well, what the heck, you know? A buddy of mine who lives in Minneapolis, a friend of the show, he could be even listening tonight, you know, it's a thing whereby he constantly comments about, you know, my white friends, they're only now beginning to understand it's the fact that, you know, we're isolated, we're in this community, we can't go out. And then, you know, when people were dying out here in the streets of New York and New Jersey and parts of Pennsylvania and Connecticut, you know, of course, the epicenter was here when it first began. You know, their attitude was, well, that's New York, you know. Well, he's
right.
From New York. He understands basically when something goes on of the magnitude of what he witnessed via the television tube every night. He started to go out, went out of his way to get a mask. He couldn't get the N95s, as quite a few people couldn't at the height of the crisis here. And he just started covering his face. People looked at him like as if he was crazy. You know, and then on top of it, he's a person of color, he's black. And he's a minority in this particular area, but it's only now, it's the confluence of events, the fact that everybody has been impacted by this disease. They were in denial that places like Texas and Florida and the Midwest would be so severely impacted the way they are now. How long did it take for Pence to come up and say, well, you know, I think they would be under the advisement of most of the scientific community that we start wearing these masks? You know,
decision. Actually, he wasn't. They really don't want to say it for whatever reason.
No, it's like they can't help it. Even McConnell has come out and start. It was a slap in the face. This guy don't know what he's doing. He may be Republican. He may be my leader, but he doesn't know what the expletive is going on here. He's in his own little world. And the bottom line is that all of us now are being impacted by it. Florida, Texas, Arizona. And I just know how some of these people think. I hate to sound so narrow-minded and prejudiced, but I am certain the vast majority of these people 6 weeks ago kept looking at New York and just felt, well, all right, it's the city. It's the East Coast. It's mostly minorities. So if you're in if you're in an area where blacks and Latinos live in large communities like that, you're going to be affected too. There's no immunity, but we could go out. You know, we're not vulnerable like they are. Even if we're living among people of black and Latino heritage, it doesn't matter because we are the dominant ones until they get their expletive knocked down, you know, that they realize this is an equal opportunity killer, you know, and they get it. And still, look, you know, it just amazes me, you know, how some of them are so defiant and they were willing to go down with the flag, but hey,
right.
It is what
their,
it is.
Their hatred
is
that strong. I want to put a pause right here what we're talking about, because Byron, you got to jump off in about 5 minutes, right? And
I got 15 minutes. I have to go. I'll be on site at 8:45, so I'll be good till 8:30. So I'm good.
Good. And just right around then, I want to talk about what you're getting ready to do. But since we have that time, and I want to continue this discussion going on, because cases are rising in 29 states, including here in Jersey, as a matter of fact. But Texas, Florida, and Arizona are the biggest spikes, right? And we know that those are three Republican governors, right? They're refusing to go along with the science. Certainly, what's-his-face in Florida really refusing to go along with the science, as did Texas governor. And now in Arizona governor, I think he's still keeping some places open. And it got to the point where Abbott, the governor of Texas, it got so bad, he had to come out and say, I wish they had acted differently, or whatever he said. I'm paraphrasing. And most of the cases were in Houston. And if I'm not mistaken, isn't Houston where you have a large population of African-Americans? You know, I'm looking at the bigger picture. Right. So large in Texas. So clearly it looks like part of the plan is, well, let's let it blow up. Hopefully it kills off the majority of the black and brown people. If it kills off a couple of our own white supporters, that's okay too, just as long as we get rid of the majority of these minority populations. And I can't figure out any other reason other than the fact that their hatred causes them to allow the mask to be a political statement, which they have, which their Führer has told them. But there's got to be a bigger picture. And Trump, obviously, clearly his message or their intent must be to infect more people, because why would you go to places that you know where the mayor of the city and then the majority of the people that are doing the science are saying there's going to be a spread here, we would like everybody to wear masks. And of course, you know, the other side, the ones who are really hateful, who waste no opportunity to give us the middle finger just because, you know, it's a sickness that these people. I was having this discussion with my sister earlier today. What is the sickness in hating people so much that you take every opportunity to denigrate, to insult, to try and intimidate or threaten or terrorize in some way? What's the sickness that you people have with us? What is it about us that is so powerful that you must take every opportunity? And I shared this with her because when I first started getting active, pretty active on the internet, and particularly YouTube and things I was interested in doing, I noticed as I was watching various clips of things all over the world that a lot of people would just throw out the N-word or say negative stuff out of the blue, you know, and it would not be a discussion related to anything other than just maybe there's a black person in there, or maybe, and I was surprised. I was like, wow, I forgot really that America really does still have a lot of racist people who just want to spout that out just because. You know, it's like stretching, and it's like, you know, you're exhaling, and they want to yell out the N-word or something. It is a deep sickness that drives that hatred. And so when you have these cases, hop in there. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, let me tell you how deep that racism goes, okay?
Yes, sir.
Just so you understand, it's the easiest thing for the president and Pence, because they're symbols, to say, America, put a mask on. How hard was that, Derek? Was it that easy for you? Exactly. So the notion is this. There's a mayor in one of these southern cities that has told black people, you don't have to wear a mask because I understand that if you put one on and you got a hood on, you might be stereotyped as the enemy. Now, in that case, black folks, you don't have to wear a mask. Now, what kind of idiot engages in that kind of conversation with a community telling black people not to wear a mask because you know if you put a mask on, you might be the target of some white racist? Now, what in the God's name did he get that information? So, because let me just tell you how bad that racism is. Because back during Jim Crow days, my dad told me in Tennessee, he remembers a town where there was a barrel in the city. It was called the Laughing Barrel. Because if there were two or three black folks on the corner and they told a joke, they had to stick their head in the barrel to laugh. That's what racism is all about. Who thinks of things like that to oppress people? That's evilness.
Right.
That is ungodly.
Exactly what my sister was saying today.
And I'll tell you why
white
folks are paranoid about us. Because they don't have a personal relationship as the first person with God.
Mm.
Africans do. And archaeologists will tell you, Lucy, where did Lucy come from? Africa.
Easy, bro. Easy, bro.
Come on. Easy. It's real easy to follow this one because not by calling, the anthropologists are calling it. Okay? And in every culture in Africa, every tribe that I've ever read a study, I took anthropology at the University of Kansas, and every tribe that I ever came in contact with in my studies all had a personal relationship with a higher God that they believed was first person. Now, you introduced, this on the other day, the Bible that the Christians used in America took out 2/3 of the Bible to give to the slave. They never had a full Bible. They gave them just enough information to secure their relationship as slave to the white master. Just enough.
Well, they didn't want us to learn, but I mean, with all due respect, Eric, I mean, there were not Eric Byron. That there was a phenomenon out here, you know, that the Southern Baptist Convention would gladly say that, you know, oh no, we were, you know, historically involved with religion.
But that's way
years,
after. You're talking about,
you know,
Southern Baptist. Hold on, you're talking about the Southern Baptist Convention is way after what he's talking about. He's talking about the essence of slavery and what that was used. The Southern Baptist Convention is something that comes way later in history.
No,
I'm not understanding the link you're making. The pathos, the
involvement, it's not to say that they did not understand religion. And the fact of the matter is they didn't want us to be, you know, because we came here with our own, you know, even though we were shackled, we had our own religious beliefs.
Of course.
Coming back from the mother country, you know. So, I mean, the deal is, as far as I'm concerned, there's always been this division between what they believe and what we believe, and they certainly did not want us to become any better because there was a role for us to play in this society, that we had to be subservient, that we drove the economy, even if they knew that slavery was wrong. Thomas Jefferson, he knew it was wrong. You know, and he, you know, got a role in trying to see that these people had their freedom, and he turned around and he had personal relations with these people, you know, and it's still, it was just one of those things that they allowed this to go on. And so, I mean, we're only feeling this because of 400 years of what, come again?
I was just going to let you know, historically, as history has written it and recorded in the relationship of the African-American or the African in America from 1619 forward, there are laws still on the book that have not been taken out where it was okay for white men to go and claim and rape any black woman that they wanted.
Exactly.
Any black woman.
Yeah, yeah. You know, even when they said that they were free, that they weren't free. You know, this is what this is all about now.
Of course.
You know?
I mean, it was all these years.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a whole big lie. I mean, you know, and that makes me think, you know, draws my attention, and something that goes in accordance with this is that just how Trump, you know, he retweeted, you know, the white power, the old man saying white power, which is really, really funny in the retirement community, where you got the old white people that were the liberal white folks, that were the righteous white folks protesting, and you got the other the racist white folks, seniors, riding by in the golf carts, and the dude yells white power, which is clearly you can hear it I mean, there's no mistaking when it's said or what's said, because he's right in front of the camera when he says it. So I don't know how the Grand Wizard in Chief could have missed that, like his girl says. But, you know, and then you have the other situation in St. Louis, I think it was, where the couple pulled guns on protesters going past their house. Now, to give it context, that was the mayor. That's that same woman who was the mayor that decided to read the names of protesters on the air and give their
right.
full names, addresses, where they lived, trying to set them up. So they organized this protest to go past her house, obviously yelling, you know, resign, Linda, and all this other stuff. And she comes outside waving a handgun, and her son and her husband looks like he's waving an AK or a long gun automatic rifle. And so, you know, and Trump retweeted both of these things, that these were supporters of his. And it kind of goes in accordance with what we're talking about, you know. I mean, there is a sickness in these people, a deep, deep level sickness that goes beyond the spirituality of things. They bastardized the Bible, that book, which in itself is kind of somewhat fabricated in many parts, right? So here they made this up, and it just is something that continues, and they say that his base is all he has left, so it is going to get worse as we get closer to November, because the guy is alienating everybody who might give him any type of support, people who they might be able to convince to come support him. So they say he's just going to go straight for the base, which clearly, if you look at his actions, he's clearly doing.
Cut you off, Eric, but I mean, the deal is there's no question there is a pathology, but I think it goes further than that. I just think basically there is an ingrained nature of fear in these people, why they think, and I hate to use that terminology, these people, but, you know, you said something a moment ago when you were talking to one of your sisters about, you know, when you thought about getting involved, and it triggered something within me. When I started, you know, out in the business 1,000 years ago, and it was bad then, and I'm certain, even though I'm retired now, it's just as bad, because I see what goes on. I see how even within the confines of the media, the latent racism, even though you're balanced and fair in your reporting, you know, always in the fishbowl. They're always looking for something to look at to see the swimming around
and fair,
to
they're
pick
not,
you apart.
They're not that. They're not balanced and fair. They're not balanced and fair.
No, I'm
That's
talking about
say.
Our reportage is balanced
fair. Oh, okay.
That they look within the fishbowl to find something wrong with you. Oh, you know, I used to get, and I hate to use this word, oh, the nigger can't read. Why don't you find from the network? Oh, boy, I didn't think he could do this. I couldn't think he'd do that. I would even work amongst liberals and not even call the names tonight. You know, the problem is there is a pathology, but I think it's based on fear, because they don't want to let go. They can't bring themselves to change. All this effort about defunding police departments and getting people involved, and not everything should require a law enforcement officer to respond to a 911 call, even if it's black-on-black crime. I'm not saying that I don't fear to a certain extent what happens, because not every person that looks like me holds the same values that I do, but I do know the pathos of what that ignorance is coming from. And until my brother understands the struggles that we have to go through, he may be younger, he could be older and still so frustrated that he takes his anger out on us. I think it's still a situation. There is a lot to learn, and we're in the midst of another curve. You know, this is another exercise that America's going through, and we have to deal with this fear, because they're afraid to let go.
The fear might be with, my perspective is a little bit different. The fear might be in there, but there's a lot of hate, too, and I guess hatred comes out of fear. But I really don't have the time to give a damn why they do it, They just need to get over it, and something needs to happen.
And how,
but before
how
we jump
we,
off,
you know.
let's get Byron. Let's get Byron in here. Byron, you want to talk about the show you're getting ready to do and the success of your show and
well,
things like that before
sure,
you
well,
before you have
I want
to
give
off.
A I give you an update on the Fannie Lou Hamer show. I just found out 2 days ago that the Fannie Lou Hamer show will that one that we aired will be aired at the National Baptist Convention for the Black Baptists. 1.5 million
right.
people will get it. See this show. Thank God for Fannie Lou Hamer because that story resonates in our election every single day. I've heard on the floor of the Congress one of our brothers and sisters from the African American or the Black and Latino caucus say, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. It's important. That statement must be attached to the rationale and the reason why she said it and what she did for the state of Mississippi, in which we today, this weekend, we saw the legislature retire the symbol of the bars and the cross on their flag.
Mm.
Did you know the significance of that impact on African Americans in a state where Mississippi, goddamn, excuse me, but that's the song Nina Simone sang it.
Yeah.
And you want to know why she sang it? Hanging fruit.
That's right.
Lynching. And so this weekend, why go back to that symbol? Because imagine for the 110 years African slaves or Americans had to live under that oppression. That symbol, every time you look at that flag, you got to go through the oppression that has been leveled against not just the people in the state of Mississippi, but all across the country. And that flag is important to retire. Let's get these symbols straight. Because like you said earlier, Wayne, Thomas Jefferson raped Sally Hemings. She was not his mistress. George Washington had 300 slaves. Okay?
Yep.
First name. All right? And he, on his deathbed, only freed about 100 at the most. Okay? So what was the reason and the rationale for him holding on to the rest of them? They will go to heaven with him or go to hell or go to purgatory? I don't give a hell where he went to. But I do know this. The father of our country was a slave owner. Now, if you're going to change the dynamics of democracy, you got to take its symbols. Because that's what we live by. We pledge an allegiance to a symbol. And that's important because after so many years, think about this. What does a symbol of two generations of young African Americans growing up in this country under President Obama? They don't know another president.
That's right. That's right.
And then
we
gotta
deal
with
ironic
what we got right now.
And this man is trying,
yeah.
And now the current occupant is trying to dismantle everything that would be representative of Obama. And it's ironic that the harder he tries, the more Obama stands out compared to
him.
And
you know why?
Which is
because
really
Obama
the interesting
was
thing.
A constitutional scholar. His
That's
constitutionality
right.
protected all the safeguards and guardrails on Obamacare. Imagine. Mm-hmm. 50 times this Congress has tried to take it out. How many
including,
millions of dollars of wasted
including
money?
Including they tried to get rid of it just Friday night. Let's talk about that real quick.
That's
including,
right. Once
including
again,
they just
once
tried
again.
To get rid of it when nobody was looking on Friday in the middle
That's
of a
right.
pandemic, which is one of the most
That's
devious
right.
things you can do because they have not offered any alternative plan. It's one thing if you offer
no.
an alternative plan, particularly in this time, particularly when cases are going up in 29 states, many of the states that this guy came out and encouraged people to come out and pretty much encouraged them not to wear a mask, right? And also said it was a hoax and things like that. So it's a particular amount of – a particular level of deviousness, if you will, right? Of a particular kind of despicable kind of a perspective you have to try and do that, right? Because a lot of people, what are we talking about? About 20 million people now would be without health insurance in the middle of a
That's
pandemic,
right.
and this guy is trying to make sure people don't have it. It's unbelievable. I mean, that's why I'm talking about the hatred. It's, and when you talked about his fear, that's why I said there's a deep sickness in these people. If you want to be that savage to people, That barbaric. This shit is barbaric, some of the things that some of these people do and think of to do and have thought of to do throughout history. Look what they did. Was it Amadou Diallo, Wayne? Or who was it that when the brother was caught, they sodomized him with a plunger? Who thinks of this?
Abner Louima.
Abner Louima. But who thinks
right.
of this?
Well, I like believe
you said,
it's alive.
You said, Byron, what kind of sick individuals that want to get medieval, if I could quote my brother Ving, but what kind of sick individuals sit there and think individuals who are supposed to protect and serve, by the way, who stood up and took an oath and swore to protect and serve the community. So surely the police department must have an ulterior objective because back in the day, their job was to catch us, right?
Yep.
So, and that's always been the theme. Always.
And you would think that
don't
this
forget,
is part of
don't
their
forget,
training
12
the way
years
they
a slave,
act.
12 Years a Slave was about a brother who was a freed man, got picked up in Washington, D.C., taken off the streets, and put into slavery.
Right. Yeah,
it is.
Slave law.
Isn't that something? It's chilling. It's frightening that we are in an era still where we are still susceptible. Any one of us can walk out the door, and it can happen to any one of us. You know, it's like 95 degrees out. I don't want to have to wear, even if I wore a suit and tie. The other day there was this open forum on MSNBC or CNN, one of the stations, and Hakeem Jeffries, who represents part of Brooklyn, the distinguished congressman, Leonard Jeffries' nephew, said that when he was in junior high school, they used to stop him. When he was in college, they used to stop him. Law school stopped him. He's a member of the Congressional Black Caucus, and they still stop him. You know, they still question that. Why is it that we're like this? You know, why still after all these years? You know, I'm not just one from the streets, but he is. I mean, he's one of all of us. You know, so it doesn't matter. No one walks around with a Geiger counter saying, well, he's better than the other. It's just what they perceive. You know, you're driving around.
Well, they see black. It's what they perceive. They perceive black is what they see. They see black, so they act accordingly. I mean, that's what they did with Tim Scott. Tim Scott Tim Scott is their main House Negro, and he's been stopped going into the Senate. And you see what he had to say to them.
Even though when they asked him about those white power chants, he couldn't help but have to, capitulate and say, hey, it was wrong. You know, I mean, I don't understand people like that. You know,
it was hard for him to say it, though.
Scott.
If you look,
I think he's
it's
Tom
hard for him
Scott.
To say it.
Exactly. I really feel that he's Tom Scott, and I hate to go there with my roundabout humor.
That's
but
good.
The bottom
good.
Line is, it's unfortunate that we still have people like that. But you know, God bless them. Everybody has a right. You know, we're not a monolith, as we say.
Let's jump on this last thing, the most recent issue that came out today, and I want to get your take on it real quick, Byron, before you jump off. The Russia taking out bounties, putting bounties on Americans, and then Trump claiming he didn't know anything about it, which claimed that he didn't see the report or whatever, and the discrepancies are, well, he doesn't read, so even if they put it in his hand, did he actually see it, and all this bullshit, and whatever you guys want to jump off into it.
I got two things I'm going to say on this because I got to go after I make the commentary. The first thing was that tonight's show that I'm involved in as the narrator is a play called Kingdom Come. It's written by Coney Cutfinger and her partner Joe Eisen. It's a musical. It's a sci-fi musical. It's really dealing with the very near future about how this country is engaging in the changes it's going through right now. So that's tonight at 8 p.m. It's on Facebook, y'all, and it's free, so you can get a chance to hear it. So right after the show, listen, come on over to Facebook and listen to Kingdom Come. Anyway, here's my take on the Russian thing. Malcolm Nance gave the best explanation this weekend on Joy Reid. I engage you to go to Malcolm's page and then listen to how he defines our 17 agencies of high intelligence, super CIA agencies that we operate in this country. Every day, they are go through every memo that has any kind of indication of a threat to our national security, and within 10 minutes, they have got to come to the briefings in the morning and give the president a 411, 123, is it a threat, is it not a threat, is it something we should be apprised of, how to take action? That's done normally. That's the protocol of the 17 agencies. So when he says he wasn't briefed, he may not, like you said, engaged in conversation about it, but he knew. Great Britain knew. Okay? They were given this information from us. From us.
Right.
Okay? So at the point at which, don't buy it, and Malcolm says they're either highly incompetent or ignorant or both. That's, I'm telling you, watch that, because it explains exactly what we do in the intelligence agency in D.C. alone, not the nation.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about National Security Agency, the CIA, the FBI, and other agencies you don't even know or ever heard of, because they operate in the dark and in the shadows of the spy versus spy genre. So this was incredible. It is a threat, and he committed treason. Treason. I don't care what he says. Now, engage this, because in the midst, since the Mueller report, there were only three charges. Since the Mueller report, you can name at least a dozen more charges that he's engaged in, and treason after this Russian thing is the number one, because he sold us down the river. He gave up American forces to be fodder for the Russian friend of his, Vladimir Putin. That's treason. And as of that revelation, he should have been out of office yesterday.
That's right. That's right. That is treasonous behavior. And what's your thoughts on it there, Brother Gilman? I know that
I have to concur. I mean, I didn't get a chance, when I do watch a lot of MSNBC, but I am familiar with Malcolm Nance. I think he's a brilliant brother. He certainly has a long history, a familial history with, you know, law enforcement in this country and all that. And, you know, you're absolutely right. It is treasonous that this character was able to just come out with any excuse, and his press secretary with the flim-flam, you know, about, well, we're not really sure, he didn't think it was worthy of any kind of acknowledgement and things like that. But the bottom line is, and there is a thin line where he could plausibly say, well, the Taliban's been after American soldiers, you know, blah, 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 anyway. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not in the least bit surprised. You know, I don't know what other empirical evidence is needed. He has a relationship with Vladimir Putin. You know, he should have been impeached and found guilty of treason long before this episode. I filled out my application ballot today. We must come out and vote. You know, we have to acknowledge what Beyonce said yesterday. Our ancestors, you know, even those that were not even part, you know, I'm talking about my own familial history where, you know, we came from other parts of the world. This vote is a vote for our history here. It's about our future. You know, it's unfortunate, you know. And the deal is, some people, I have to say, those who are progressive understand that black lives is not just about black lives. It's about lives, period. That's why there are those people of other cultures, other societies, internationally, are acknowledging what this symbolic protestation is all about. You know?
Yeah, let's you and I get into that a little bit further, Wayne. And let's let Byron. Byron, you got to jump off.
Yeah, I got to jump off, guys, but thank you for this Monday event, and also to Wayne and to Eric. As you know, this is the anniversary of our passing of our leader, Kay. And so I just want to give notice
to
that.
My mother passed on the 21st of June last year.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Oh.
So it's like my very special appreciation of your mom. Okay.
Not
so
exactly
thank you
the anniversary.
The baton and moving it forward. Brother, you get my respect any day of this week. And Wayne, thank you for the friendship, because we're going to keep doing this. We got some truths we got to tell these people. That's it. Peace out, guys.
I'm so sorry. Bro. You know, I've been so
Have a good show. Have a good show. Have a good show, Byron. We'll talk
guys.
To you a little bit.
See you Wednesday. See you Wednesday.
All
right.
All, right. All the best.
Wednesday evening.
Byron.
So, yeah, Wayne, So, I mean, the treachery that he's caused with this and with, you know, it just continues on. Like you're just saying, I mean, I didn't mean to cut you off. You were in the middle of making a point. But, I mean, it's just that this man has no real interest in in really presenting it to the things. I think that I'm going to have another caller. This is my dad here. He wants to hop in the conversation.
Oh, okay.
Hey, Dad, how you doing? Former Assemblyman William Payne. My dad, how you doing this evening, Dad? We've got about 15 minutes left. So let me just ask you.
I'm doing fine, thanks.
What's your assessment about this gentleman's presidency? During the course of your lifetime, I know you've seen it. You know, you can speak firsthand about some of about the history of the United States, but particularly in terms of presidents who have acted in nefarious or non-positive ways, being that, you know, we've had racist presidents before, but what's your assessment of where Trump stands among the bad presidents during the course of your lifetime?
Oh, well, good evening, guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm okay. I was interested in your comments about the voting, which is something that too many of us do not do.
Exactly.
One of the things I try to underscore over and over and over again, we can yell and scream about one person doesn't do anything, they don't do anything, I'm not going to vote because they don't listen. Of course they're not going to listen if you don't vote, and that's exactly what you want to do. I try to sell that over and over again, that if in fact the person that you vote for doesn't do what you want them to do, then the next time you vote somebody else. Times I've heard people in the inner city say, I ain't gonna vote. I don't vote. They don't pay attention. But you go into suburbia or some other place like that, one of the most important days that comes up is election day, and the family tells their kids that from the beginning. But we're our own enemy, because we cannot impact at all on who gets elected if we stand on the sidelines. And until we learn that lesson, then we're going to be in the same boat over and over and over again. But anyway, we're talking about this person that's in the White House now. I don't think ever anybody could ever have imagined that person or someone of that ilk would ever be elected president of the United States. I don't think anybody thought it. That's why we were taken by surprise, actually. Because too many people, and I've seen some TV programs from the Morning Joe and whomever else. Donald Trump used to be a constant guest on that program. Everyone thought he was a great guy in New York, et cetera, et cetera. And then it turns out that, they were taken. You know. It's beyond belief that this person who has no principles, no understanding, it seems as though Putin and other people have the goods on the guy, and therefore they have him exactly where they want him. The entire country is suffering from it. But anyway, we can change it.
And that's the point, not to cut you off. And I have to. It took a minute for me. And again, not to sound maudlin, but I couldn't believe a whole year has gone by since we lost our beloved sister. But the thing is that it is amazing. I was not a frequent watcher of Morning Joe. I watch it more now than I've ever done before. Oh. You know, I don't know if it's because it's become somewhat more miscegenated with the kind of company that they have on. You know, our brother from Princeton University and Reverend Al and all the others. But the thing is that I never thought Scarborough was all that balanced to begin with, because to me he represented that culture that we speak of, you know. And but you know, I have to say that it's clear as black and white out here that he realizes that he made a colossal error in judgment, and only those who understand and follow Trump from the beginning, people from New York who saw his position on Central Park and all the other controversial things he would say. And it's just one of those things. It's deeply ingrained in his DNA. His daddy is largely responsible for his thinking. But, you know, you make mistakes, but you're old enough to understand what mistakes you have made and the price to be paid for making that mistake. And, you know, you're selling out our culture. You're selling out our history. You're selling out whatever leadership role our country had in
you're saying
in the
if we don't vote,
community.
We're selling it out. If we don't vote, we're selling that out. That's what you're saying, right, Wayne?
That too.
If I'm following correctly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But he took on the role of being commander-in-chief and thought nothing of it to sell us out.
Well, yeah. I mean, we have Trump over here in at least as far as I do, he's already in that box of being, you know, an aberration, a despicable guy, someone who all of these things that we previously thought have become true. He just has outdone himself in terms of how low he has gone. Because I'm sure nobody knew he was such a despicable individual. But I'm not even I'm pushing that aside because zeroing in on what you were saying, Dad, about the voting process, which is so very important, and it's important on every single level, because we've talked around in our family, have discussions about politics all the time, Wayne, and as you can imagine, you've been around sometimes, and I always talk about is that the Republicans, they formulate a plan, and they are able to get a lot of their supporters and a lot of their rank and file to adhere to that plan, as we see them blindly following him now. That's evidence of how they stick to their goals. And my thing is that the Democrats need to have a long-term vision plan like that too, where we see out what we're going to do in the future. And that is partly making sure everybody understands why it's necessary to vote on every single level, because the municipal elections, state or in the state elections, are the ones that have laid the groundwork for states like North Carolina to try to roll back voting rights, like these other states, to do that, because they have the majority of Republican legislatures. They focus on those things. They focus on judges and things like that. So when people don't understand that, like you're trying to get them to understand the importance not only of the presidential elections, but every single one of them, and maybe even more important, are your local municipal elections, which then gives the foundation for the next level of elections. Municipal gives a foundation for the state, for the county, which gives the foundation for the state, which gives the foundation federally. You see what I'm saying? So a lot of people don't realize how important it is to vote on every level, you know?
And let me make a
go ahead.
If I may. One of the things that we have to understand in our community is that people are elected to office to serve you, not themselves, not you. The unfortunate part that we have found too often is that people get elected and they do not use that position to change things within by law, for instance. They're in a position there. Unfortunately, what happens is that too many people that look like us fall in love with the position. They want to be there, and regardless of what they have to do, no matter to stay there, that's what it is. The reason for running for public office and getting in a position is to be able to have influence on legislation that will impact in a positive way on the lives of your constituents, your people. But when people go down to those offices and they're there for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you can't get them to understand that they're there to vote for more money for schools, et cetera, to make sure that the police are doing their job, et cetera. I mean, you're there for the reason. And if, in fact, you make enemies with the political bosses and you're defeated, so be it. Your job is not to be there for the rest of your life. But your job is to be there to make a change. When I was in the legislature, I introduced legislation to try to have the Supreme Court Justice of the state of New Jersey impeached, because he at one time was the head of the state police in New Jersey, and the state police were stopping it, profiling black folks. And when Chris Whitmer was the governor, she wanted to appoint him to the Supreme Court, and I fought against it. She appointed him anyway, and then I introduced legislation then to have him impeached. Well, I looked around, and I got my voter for it, and one other person voted. But we had about 30 blacks in the list. Not a single other one but Donald Tucker voted with me because, well, I don't want to hurt myself. Well, you're there not to stay. You're there to make life better for your people and your constituents. And not a single one of them, I looked around, and I was myself and Tucker. So people have to understand that they're in there to make a better change, make a life change. You know, legislation that I introduced, the amnesty legislation. I want our children to know about the contribution, that this is our country. I believe, you know, I'm an African-American, et cetera. But we built this country, too, and I refuse to say that, okay, let's talk about African history and so-and-so and forget about what we're doing here. We had great kingdoms at one time. But right here, this is our country. And if we teach the right that, you know, our forefathers were not only enslaved people, but they were inventors and doctors and so-and-so, fought in every single war there is. So this is our country, and I refuse to let people say, well, yeah, but let's don't worry about this. Let's make sure that everybody knows about Africa. Well, I think so. And if, in fact, you want to learn about Africa, I believe that we should take world history. Other immigrants here, if they want to learn about Germany or, you know, Italy and whatever, take world history and you'll learn all about it. But don't give up, don't dare give up the opportunity to teach our children that this is our country, that we fought for it, and that we should not look the other way and say, okay, well, fine, they can have this, but no. So that's responsible. And then if you get defeated, so be it. You've done something that was worthwhile. But that, you know, I hate to get off on a.
No, but it's important, but, you know, and I have to congratulate you again, Bill, for having forwarded that effort with Amistad. I know the late publisher of Crisis Magazine, the NAACP's magazine, Warren Martin, did not live long enough, but he was one of the, of many people who tried to advance that cause. And you actually brought it to greater prominence, you know. And it's important that we do understand our history. A lot of us don't, you know, and that's it.
Right.
It's just amazing.
What's also an interesting thing is that what you have now, particularly with this type of technology and the internet, now people are able to share information with each other, is that, you know, you'll go to, if you spend a lot of time on social media, Facebook and things like that, you'll see a lot of little clips of blurbs of black history that's being shared by various black websites. And a lot of more white people are getting aware of the history that you spoke about, Dad, that shows that they get enlightened to, and I've seen it by statements by some people that are white, that they get enlightened to more so to the contributions of African Americans. But also, it's also that same thing that allowed them to see the brutality of racism and slavery. The movie that was made back in the day, the Civil Rights Movement, and when we had the water hose and the cops, and now fast forward all these years to seeing George Floyd and so many of others of our people be murdered, it is that same thing of revealing the truth and seeing it before your eyes. And the great thing about it, we've got 90 seconds, I want to say this before we leave, the great thing about it is that there are so many white people that are rejecting that as their history and their culture of racism and murder
and
terrorism.
Shame.
And that's the thing that's bringing us all together, and that's going to give me the last word because we got about a minute to go. Dad, thanks for calling in and give us your perspective. I want you to call in. Right. We want to do a thing about the Newark uprising, which last Monday was the 50th anniversary, right, 50 years since the uprising in Newark. And my father was there at the beginning, so we want you to come back on and talk about that. Okay, Dad?
Right, very good. Will do.
All right. Thanks for calling in. That's my dad, former Assemblyman William D. Payne. Thanks, Dad. We'll talk to you later. Wayne, thanks for calling. Legendary newsman, you want to give the people your send-off?
Hey, man, I'm just in awe of you all. I tell you, and I say it honest to God, you know, I was so taken back. I hadn't realized it was a year. May God bless Kay and the history of the Payne family. And, you know, you all are great. You all are really great. I'm not just saying to be saying it.
Well, you are a history maker too, sir. You always downplay yourself. But this is Wayne Gilman, everybody. We've all listened to you being on the radio and making us all proud because you're a brother that definitely knew and knows what you're talking about. So I'll talk to you again tomorrow, Wayne
Thank
Gilman.
You.
My name is Citizen Payne, Kay's son. This is Kay's son and friends. That's the legendary newsman, Wayne Gilman, brother Byron Saunders, a legendary historian. I'm Kay's son, Eric Citizen Payne. That's Bob Marley in the background. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks, Dad, for calling in. We'll talk to you soon. I'm selling those, and I'm a memory told, and now I'm making even life.